Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse talk show. Our condolences to the believers on the Nakba Day, the catastrophe. In order to talk about the Nakba Day, we have decided to humbly invite Sheikh Ali Qummi from the Islamic Republic of Pakistan to come and sit down with us and speak with us about this Nakba Day, which occurred in the land of Palestine. Now, of course, talking about Palestine, because as the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said that Palestine is the most important issue for the Muslim world, and so we wanted to discuss the day of Nakba. Let's go ahead and invite our guest, Sheikh Ali Qummi. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the talk show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you.
Sheikh Ali Qummi, of course, thank you again, first and foremost, for taking time out of your busy schedule and talking about this catastrophe. And of course, we're going to get into the definition of the name and these things, but the Nakba Day, which occurred, or a historical event which occurred in the land of Palestine. So can you, please tell us a little bit about the Nakba Day and why is it commemorated on a yearly basis? Of course, on the 15th of May, Bismillah in the name of Allah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, thanks for highlighting this important issue. As the leader calls it, the most important issue of the Muslim world and Muslim Ummah that we all should be concerned about. The issue of Palestine, since the time we were born up until now, we've been listening about it. The unlimited amount of oppression that has been committed, and unprecedented pressure and oppression that has been committed on the Palestinians, it is really a sad state of affairs. And at the same time, it is something that is a slap on the face of humanity. We live in a world which cherishes some values like, human rights, for instance. There's talk of human rights, there's talk of decency, morality, rights of the nations, right to return. But unfortunately, when it comes to Palestine, none of these terms have any meaning.
Right.
Now, to your question, Al-Nakba Day is apparently a day which gets commemorated every year on 15th of May throughout the world, primarily by the Palestinians and, generally speaking, by people of conscience, which includes, mashallah, all the Muslims, non-Muslims, believers, non-believers, they come out and they express their anguish, they express their anger, they express their discomfort with the situation of Palestine that has been, an ongoing situation since 1948, when the Zionism, went to Palestine and occupied the lands of the Palestinians. So Al-Nakba, as you said, the word itself literally means catastrophe.
Catastrophe.
The catastrophe, right? Wow. And this is, to say the least about Palestine is that they have been subjected to catastrophic situation and plight. And, it's really unfortunate to see.
A catastrophic amount of oppression upon a people.
Right. Now, yes, it's called a day, a Nakba Day, but allow me to say that, a Nakba is the never-ending catastrophe for the Palestinians.
Yes.
It's not just a day.
It's 70 years, every
it's
single day.
It's 74, 75 of years of non-stop aggression, oppression, and illegal occupation of the Palestinians, and this nation has been, what can I say, it's been resistant against all the oppression that has been committed against them, hats off to them. But it's an never-ending Nakba, right? Yes. And this is something we all should start feeling. When it comes to Al-Quds Day, a lot of times we're like, okay, Al-Quds Day is here, let's commemorate Al-Quds Day.
Right.
Now, what about throughout the year? Are you concerned about Palestine? Are you doing anything about Palestine? Well, even the best of the best that we have, their answer would be negative. No, they don't do anything about Palestine throughout the year. They don't raise their voice. They're just busy with other things. But when Al-Quds Day comes, they at least express their discomfort with the situation.
Yeah.
Similarly, Nakba Day, it gets commemorated. But guys, it's an ongoing thing that the Palestinians are feeling day in, day out. Mm-hmm. So what happened November 29th, 1947, mm-hmm. is when the United Nations General Assembly, it adopted Resolution 181. It's also called the Partition Resolution.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
According to this resolution, Palestine would be divided into two, mm-hmm. a Jewish state and an Arab state.
Right.
So United Nations, it begins there, right? United Nations sanctions this, mm-hmm. and it accepts that, okay, there are going to be two states from now on. The question is, why? Who gave you the right to decide for the Palestinians,
yeah.
that their land is going to be divided in two?
Right.
Who gave you the right? Right? Mm-hmm. And this is all the while the Palestinians rejected this petition.
Right.
They rejected this resolution. They protested against this resolution.
That it's not fair, yeah.
That it's not fair. You don't have the right to split us up in two. What do you mean by an Arab state and a Jewish state? Well, there are Jewish who are Arabs, and they've been living in Palestine mm-hmm. for the longest time ever without any problem.
With no problems, yes.
Where do you bring about this whole concept of a Jewish state? So there was protest, you know, there was opposition to this.
Because I think this point is quite important here before we continue. If you look and you research into some of the quotes from rabbis, and especially Orthodox rabbis, right? Jewish leaders, religious leaders, spiritual leaders for the Jewish faith, when you go and you research their comments, they explicitly say, very openly, without any, you know, very clearly and explicitly say that we were treated much better when Palestine was Palestine.
Of course.
And after the Zionist regime was imposed upon this area, not only have we as Jewish rabbis, Orthodox, suffered oppressions, but now the Muslim world also looks down upon us.
Exactly.
Because of the oppression that the Zionist regime has done against the Palestinians.
This is so true.
So even they admit to this.
Because the discriminatory attitude of the Zionist regime and this illegal occupation is what has bothered people living in that area,
yes.
right? So Muslims, Christians, Jewish background and faith people,
right.
they've all been subjected to torture, exile, which we're going to talk about more,
right.
and you know, inhumane attitude right. by the Zionist regime, right? So hence what the rabbis say, you know, it has a background. They're not just... Now, 1947 is when this resolution
right.
was passed, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 181. Now, they said in May 1948, which is, by the way, the anniversary that the Zionist regime of Israel celebrates mm-hmm. For its
independence
so to speak,
yeah.
right?
right?
Now, of course, they don't follow the Gregorian calendar, so sometimes it's in April, sometimes it's in May. At yes. that time, it was May 1948, right? Now, they said that May 1948 is when this partition will take place.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, May 15th, 1948 is what is called Nakba Day.
Right.
So what happened on this day, we would like to know, right?
Right, right.
Brother, 800,000
mm-hmm.
Palestinians were exiled from their homes,
yeah.
from their land, from their country, and they were kicked out
mm-hmm.
without any legitimacy just because of this resolution and what the Zionist regime had
mm-hmm.
cooked for
the Palestinian land. This is close to 1 million people,
yes.
really. Close to 1 million people exiled from
the
their
minimum
homes and their
estimate,
country.
Even according to like you know, Wikipedia and you know all these
right, right.
Human rights organizations, the minimum estimate is 700,000, and the maximum I saw was 800,000. So
right.
keep that 100,000 as a buffer. Minimum of 700,000
right, right.
people they were exiled for no reason.
Minimum. Of
their
minimum.
Families,
right.
their families like you and me. You know we have our own families. Yeah. We just one day, you know, the tyrants, they come and they tell us, you know, pack up your bags and leave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know whether these guys had time to pack up their bags. right? Their houses were just confiscated, bulldozed in some cases.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I wanted to confirm because I had read somewhere that almost 500 villages had been destroyed.
Yes, correct.
So, I mean, one question that
there
comes
is... There was an onslaught. There was an attack.
And this is why the people fled.
Yes.
Because of this destruction and
killing
and murder.
Of course, they were not sent eviction notices.
Yeah,
and they just
please leave the country.
No,
they were
like that.
There was some serious killing going on.
They got attacked. They got properly killed, you know, at the hands of these Zionist soldiers, you know, so to speak, IDF and whatnot, right? And it was an open, it was an open daylight massacre that you could see. And then, you know, these are the people who ran away. Now, these people, you know, this was the first Nakba. There's another Nakba that took place in 1967. Mm-hmm. So first one is 1948.
20 years later, yeah.
This 1967 is basically when you know, the Zionist regime of Israel and some Arabs, they had a war, and then
this
as a result of
war,
that, six-day war. Yes, and at the end of that war, the Zionist regime went ahead and took over more land, and grew three times in its size. And as a result of that, there were people once again expelled from their houses. Innocent civilians, people, the Palestinians, the natives, the original people of that land, they were expelled from their houses.
Right.
Right? Their farms were destroyed, their houses were destroyed, there was an open bloodshed, and they, for the sake of their lives, fled, right? And they were made to leave their country and their land. This was 1967.
It's interesting, 1967, it's interesting this whole idea of natives and people from their homeland being kicked out and their houses burnt and, you know, women and children just having to run and flee. I'm from the United States of America, and this really reminds me of the history of the United States of America in the early era where they did this thing to the Native Americans, right? Where they also just mass exodus of these Native Americans, throw them in concentration camps, you know, women and children fleeing for their lives, fearful, terrified. So it's interesting, I don't know, that this connection between the Zionist regime and the history of the United States.
Yeah, because the masterminds are the same.
Yeah.
It's the same imperialist Zionist agenda that is being executed.
Yeah.
So the script writer is the same, right?
Right.
So you see the commonalities, you know.
Right.
Canada is the same thing. You look at Australia. The Western world is filled with
Australia
this,
with the Aborigines, yes. Absolutely.
Exactly. Now, you know, 7 million people.
7 million.
Today, as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
More than 7 million people have been exiled. Which people? Palestinians.
7 million. Yeah.
They live in refugee camps, the concentration camps in Egypt, Syria, Jordan, and occupied Palestine, you know, some of the areas in occupied Palestinian territories that they call it, which includes
camps,
Gaza and, you know, West Bank and, East Jerusalem.
And
there are, I had written it somewhere, there are
I know Lebanon had the very famous Sabra and Shatila refugee camps.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, and I'll verify this information, I remember, I thought I wrote it, 68 concentration camps exist where Palestinians are residing.
Mm-hmm.
7 million people. We're talking about a huge mass of people, which includes women, children, poorly, elderly people, you know, all sorts of exceptions there. Right, and just imagine those generations that are growing up in concentration camps.
Right.
They come from decent families. They had houses back in Palestine.
Farms.
Now, at top of, you know, adding, you know, insult to the injury, it is that these people are not allowed to return to their homeland.
Mm-hmm. This is what's called the right of no return.
Exactly, which we're going to talk about again, right? They're not allowed to go back to their homeland. How cruel that is.
Yeah.
You know, and it is a violation of international laws, which we will discuss in a little bit.
I mean, so here is interesting, right? Because you have 7 million people. If these 7 million come back, and for example, as Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei says, that there should be a referendum where the original Palestinians, whether they are Muslims, Christians, or Jews, all the original Palestinians should have a referendum and choose the government that they want, choose the type of democracy that they want, or the right. So if you have 7 million people come back into the country, that kind of tips the scale. And so it's interesting that the Zionist regime, the last thing they want is 7 million original Palestinians coming back and voting, you know, for their God-given rights.
Of course, and this is where the role of resistance comes into the picture, right? The resistance is all about accepting the legitimacy and the very existence of the Zionist regime.
Right.
The Palestinians and the resistance faction, the camp of resistance, the axis of resistance, has never, till date, accepted the very existence of the Zionist regime.
Right.
And this is something that ticks them off, right? And alhamdulillah, you know, there are places like Pakistan which have not, officially, not accepted the existence of the Zionist regime because it's an illegal entity, right? And if all these refugees, all these people who have been expelled from their homeland, their motherland, their country, if they're allowed to return, you know, and a referendum is done by through these civilians, just imagine what they're going to say.
Right, right. We want our land back. I mean, talking about rights.
So there's two-state solution that these people are going to agree with, you know, as far as I understand Palestinians and, you know, human nature's really. It's not about Palestine. It's like any human, they would not accept a two-state solution. Similarly, these people are going to not accept the existence of any other government on their country except for the Palestinian government. Right. Now, the form of government, you know, they can decide for themselves.
Yeah.
But the answer, whether they're ever going to accept the Zionist regime, it's impossible.
Even the Orthodox Jews living inside Israel don't accept the Zionist regime.
Exactly. And hence, the Zionist regime does not let these people come back.
Right.
They're barred from re-entering their own country.
Mm-hmm.
This is painful.
You know, Sheikh Ali, so there's this talk about, we were talking about rights. And I kind of started to think where, you know, there's this idea of, human rights organizations and international, you know, I guess non-profit organizations, NGOs, or, you know, whatever new name they call themselves, right? This role of international organizations, this role of human rights organizations, because we are seeing, this Nakba Day, just this one day, we have, you know, a minimum of 800,000 people being kicked out of their homes because of fear of death, and, you know, 500 villages being burned down to the
ground.
And
that's 1948.
And this is 1948. And then the 7 million, right? And then 1967, right? So what I'm saying is, if the Nakba Day one day is just 800,000 people that have had to, that people have been kicked out, and then we're saying that Nakba Day is recurring every single day. So what is the role of these human rights organizations and international organizations?
Right. So there are two ways to look at your question, right? The first is, are there any laws that would fit the situation that is going on in Palestine?
Right.
Right? International laws, you know, through these international organizations and whatnot. And then the second method is, are there any international treaties, any international bindings, laws that are in the favor of Palestinians, you know, directly? Resolutions passed to protect the rights of Palestinians. The first is general, the second is specific to Palestinians.
Right.
Now, let me tell you, you know, there are international laws and standards that have been defined in today's time and age, which guarantee the rights of Palestinians, the right to return to their homeland, you know, the right for them to be living in safe environment without the threat of the Zionist regime and its thugs, you know, wearing the uniform like IDF and so on and so forth. These terrorists, you know, who do like commit their crimes in daylight,
yeah,
you know,
right,
and there's, and you remember Rachel Corrie, right? They don't even let the reporters and the journalists survive, right?
Apparently,
this is how ruthless they are.
Apparently, recently an Al Jazeera reporter was killed.
And there was a press confirmed TV one too a while ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And you even know, though these people have written press,
everybody,
you know,
knows.
Cameras.
They've got cameras and stuff, right? And
well, how can you mistake that person for a civilian?
Nobody does that, right?
Right,
and it's only Israel. Now,
when it comes to international organizations and laws, there's a Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 13.
Sure.
You can go look it up. I could go in details, but that's going to be hours. Yeah, you know, the things I'm going to mention, I'm going to kind of...
leave it to the viewers to go and look.
Yes, list them. You can, inshallah, go and research Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 13, that guarantees Palestinian rights. The Right of Return Law, which United Nations General Assembly passed Resolution 194 back in 1948.
Yes. Which guarantees that the Palestinians can come back to their lands.
Exactly. Then UN Resolutions 2535, 393, 2452, 3236, all of these resolutions are in support of Palestinians. International Convention on Civil and Political Rights, ICCPR, affirms that no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of their right to enter their own country. It's Article 12. Mm-hmm. You know, I just read it for you. International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, CERD is this organization called. They have passed resolutions and laws in favor of the oppressed Palestinian nation. Now, There's much more, and I didn't want to, you know, just list everything here. There's much more that at international level, legally speaking, right, you see is in favor of the oppressed nation of Palestine. What happens then to all of these resolutions and these laws and so on and so forth? Well, guess what? United States of America, the head of the snake, as we called it on Al-Quds Day 2, the United States of America, it has been providing immunity, political immunity, political shield, in terms of international community. United Nations uses its muscle power to protect and defend not just the Zionist regime of Israel and its existence, but also the ongoing and everyday crimes of this regime.
Yeah, the United States is the biggest, if not best,
even
ally.
Even if it is against their own people, Americans.
Yeah.
Like I gave you the example of Rachel Corrie, and there are many others, right? Now, the United States of America is the biggest hurdle in the implementation of these resolutions. Mm-hmm. So what happens is resolutions, they get passed. You know, so it's like a face saving for all these international organizations.
And it's a law. It is now a law.
Correct.
It just needs to be implemented
it
and
just
executed.
Needs to be, yes, and they, they actually officially tell the Zionist regime that this is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And they conveniently just ignore it. Why?
Because Big Brother comes around and says, hey, it's okay, we don't need to worry about
That's
this.
That's the leverage, right?
This is amazing. Two things. One is kind of the bullying and mafia style of the regime of the United States of America. And then the other one is the blatant disregard for international law by the Zionist regime.
Exactly. And that is what turns these international organizations, most of them, practically it turns them into this, you know, showcase. It's just, you know, a hoax, you can call it, you know, which are not effective. They cannot implement anything. They cannot protect the rights of the oppressed nations of the world. In return, all they're used as, these international organizations, and that's their, by the way, their falsafa wujudi as well. That's why they were created
their
to begin
with. Their philosophy
of
existence,
right?
And creation and being.
They were created to protect and defend the rights of regimes, rogue regimes like the United States of America. These rogue countries like, you know, this illegitimate country like the Zionist regime of Israel and British and Canada and, you know, all of these Western Germany, France and, you know, so-called powers.
Yeah.
The entire purpose of these organizations, these so-called international organizations, is to be used as a tool to make sure that the agenda of the Western imperialist bloc gets executed in the world.
You know,
that's what we're dealing with.
And you know what's really kind of, I don't know, maybe it's just an interesting fact, but I believe that the largest funder of the United Nations and then, you know, indirectly all of these human rights organizations is the United States of America. So if tomorrow, if for example, the United Nations says, I don't feel comfortable doing this illegal oppressive thing that you, United States of America, wants me to do. You know, the United States of America says, well, okay, I'll just shut down your electricity. Well, what is the United Nations supposed to do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this is another topic that, inshallah, one day we get an opportunity to discuss.
You know, just like in the Janatul Baqi show.
I'm not giving you any commitments in this program. Inshallah, we will, if Allah gives us the
Because this is a very serious thing, right?
See, United Nations, right?
Yeah.
Officially, and like I said, right now it's going to be a claim. Hold on to it. Inshallah, if Allah gives us tawfiq, we will bring the research and we will prove it on camera that their report to the United States of America's military.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Pentagon and these guys.
That's who they report. Yeah. And what I'm saying is, it's not a conspiracy theory, right? Like I said, you know, I didn't want to go in this whole area, but since you made this comment. So, yes, United Nations and, you know, other United Nations affiliated so-called international organizations, or even all of these human rights organizations that cherish that they are so justice-seeking and so, like, you know, neutral, so humanitarian, that they're going to do anything and everything to make sure that the rights of the innocent, oppressed people across the world are protected. It's just a claim, and one can safely say it's a false claim. Right? It's a false claim. It's just fooling the masses out there, right? But again, it requires an entire discussion.
We just don't want
to make claims and
move on. But I will kind of semi-hold you to this idea of another talk show, inshallah, in the future. Now, here, so we kind of talked about this role of the human rights organizations and you know, where these guys stand, right? But on the other hand, I'd like to kind of know a little bit about the stance of the resistance, and you know how you view the response of the resistance and the access of resistance in the face of this Nakba Day and really this 70-75 year catastrophe that has been dealt to the Palestinian people. If you could please kind of shed some light on that.
Yes, so first and foremost, I think one thing that our viewers, inshallah, and everyone who gets to listen to this discussion, they need to understand, and inshallah they already do understand, but I'm just reiterating it, is that resistance is justified when people are occupied.
Right.
You know, this is something that you have to let it sink in, right? You have to kind of understand, go step into their shoes before you become judgmental. Sometimes, you know, some people say, no, if Palestinians just don't, you know, resist and they just give in.
Just lay down.
Yeah, and everything is going to be fine. No, it's not like that. You know, put yourself in the shoes of Palestinians. Right? Go
resistance.
Sit in the house where they were expelled from, right? And go visualize how their father or their mother were shot point blank in front of their eyes. And you expect these people not to resist the tyranny and oppression? It's unnatural what, you know, some people end up demanding from resistance and resistance bloc. The second thing that we have to understand is
before the second thing, you know, it's interesting here because you said resistance is justified
when people are occupied,
right? It's interesting here. Shahid Malcolm X, he has this very interesting quote. He says that not only is it unnatural, as you said, to tell this kind of individual who has been under oppression to do nothing. Shahid Malcolm X calls it criminal. He says it's a crime to tell somebody to not defend themselves when they are being oppressed.
Exactly.
Allahu Akbar. You know, I just wanted to add that in there before
and,
you can.
And this is essential. This is important.
It's
if we are
nature.
Human beings, right? Resistance, when we talk about resistance, sometimes people think that it's just armed resistance, you know, tanks and guns and bombs and, I don't know, knives and, you know, all these.
This is interesting. This is the first thing that comes to a person's mind.
Now, while all of that is there, and I say it on the record, right, and there's nothing wrong with it, but we have to understand the spirit of resistance.
Right.
The spirit of resistance is saying no to oppression. Whoever does it, against whoever it happens.
Wherever it happens.
Right? Now, if the Zionist regime has wronged the innocent people of Palestine. That includes all denominations, multicultural, multi-ethnic population that was residing on that land. And if it has oppressed the Masjid al-Aqsa by occupying it and making it, you know, a place of contention between the Abrahamic religions, right? This is something wrong they have done. Now, any sort of resistance against this wrong that they have done, it gets counted within the block of resistance. So we want to expand and open up this whole concept and idea of resistance against Zionism.
It's very right? good. Yeah, it's very
it could be through, this talk show is one form
right.
of resistance. We're right. part of that. We consider ourselves to be part of that resistance block
right. Right.
while we don't go to the battlefield, while we don't pick up weapons, right? We study at Hosa, we do this. Now, there are people who are on social media,
sure.
right? They are making other people aware of this resistance and why it is important and why they should be on board with it. Right now, similarly, you look at different governments, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Different countries. I gave an example of Pakistan, for instance, right?
Yes.
Pakistan has not accepted this as part of resistance,
right?
The Islamic Republic of Iran, you know, its foreign ministry, it's like, you know, different relevant branches,
right.
and especially the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the flag bearer of resistance, right? Then you have, of course, the armed resistance and different groups that we always, you know, talk about. And, you know, we see how they are siding with the oppressed and opposing the oppressors, right?
Yes.
So the resistance, you know, I would say that there was a plan of shaitan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that plan was to crush this resistance from day one.
In all its forms.
In all its forms, right? And it continues till date.
Yes.
But then there's another plan, which I call it to be Allah's plan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Allah wishes for this resistance to continue.
Yes.
Right? So the Zionists, no matter how hard they try, the cohorts of the United States of America, no matter how much pressure they exert on people of conscience, this resistance is going to continue.
Right.
And all we see is, you know, from the time we were born up until now, this resistance has kept growing. The trajectory is upwards.
Yeah.
It keeps getting stronger, and it is going to continue. It is going to stay till the demise of this illegal and illegitimate child of US and UK, right? Now, this annihilation of the Zionist regime is another important topic that I don't want to touch in this, you know, how it's supposed to take place, what's going to happen. But rest assured, the resistance is continuing till the demise of the Zionist regime. Hezbollah,
right.
Islamic Jihad, Hamas, they've been able to contain the Zionist regime. Another interesting concept that we should all keep in our minds. The Zionist regime, it is built on this expansionist ideology.
Sure.
It is in the DNA of this cancerous tumor that it is going to expand from Nile to Euphrates, right? And since from the time of its inception, if you see how it kept growing, I'm sure you have seen that picture of...
Yeah, the famous map where Palestine
disappeared,
gets smaller,
right?
And Israel keeps on getting bigger. And it's that same colonial imperialist ideology of expanding all the time.
Right.
United States of America, was only 13 colonies. It was just the northwest corner of the United States of America, 13 colonies.
Right.
And look at how much they expanded.
Right.
So it's this, as you said earlier, it's the same design, same scripture.
Right. If the resistance was not effective, then Israel wouldn't be forced to build a wall around itself.
Yeah.
Right? It is the effectiveness and the success of, and the rationale behind resistance. You know, it has been able to contain all of these resistance forces, you know, in every form and shape. We've spoken about BDS movement, right?
Right.
It is a form of resistance, right? The articles you write is a form of resistance, right?
Right. Right?
The social media, the bloggers, you know, what you do on the comments on news section,
sure,
you know,
sure.
Raising awareness, seminars, programs, you know. I remember doing Let's Talk Palestine seminar back in Houston,
right.
Like I think 2014 it was. And, you know, alhamdulillah, programs like that, you know,
yes.
which are still continuing, Alhamdulillah. They're part of this resistance. So I would say the resistance is very successful. It is mightier than ever, and it is on the rise. You know, the anti-Israel, the anti-Zionist sentiment, and hence the anti-imperialist and anti-American sentiment, it continues to grow.
Yes.
Right? Despite the fact that they own all the mainstream media.
And they spend billions of dollars.
Even the social media, yeah. Right? And after the Shahadat of our beloved Shahid Soleimani, Shahid Qasem Soleimani, the social media has become this very pro-establishment, pro-America, pro-Zionist narrative hub. You know, because as soon as you say something that pertains to resistance, you know.
Even if you put a picture of Qasem Soleimani.
Or Sayyidina Nasrullah, for instance, you get removed. You know, how many times has Islamic Pulse been removed?
Islamic Pulse at least three plus times. We used to have 50,000 viewers and then they just shut down the... And
they think they can demoralize the resistance through these small little cheap acts.
And I wanted to add here something, and one thing that kind of connects back to the wall thing. And both of these is sometimes people think that, so they built the wall because they're powerful and mighty. Or they shut down websites or they try to control and censor because they're powerful, right?
And
shadow banning and these things. And I'm going to add one more. These negotiations, and I want to get your comment if you want to comment on it. The negotiations of these various, you know, sellout Arab regimes with the Zionist regime, right, is another show of power. I say the opposite. And I believe Imam Ali Sayyid Ali Khamenei also says, he actually says this is because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. They're losing, they're afraid, right? And they know that eventually they cannot win. And so what are they doing? Out of fear, they built a wall. Out of fear, they shadow ban Islamic Pulse or shut down the channel, right? And then, and out of fear, the Zionist regime is now going and normalizing relations with Arab states.
This is beautiful, and I would
out
add,
of fear.
I would add with fear, with your permission, I would add desperation.
Yeah, desperation. Yeah, it's last straw.
It's they don't know what to do, how to change the tide, in the midst of all this, again, you know, it's a tangent, normalization, and the deal of the century.
Another talk show, right?
Look how horribly the deal of the century failed.
Yeah, I mean. It's
honestly, like, you know, we don't even have to comment on it, you know. And again, when we have time, we will discuss that at some stage. I want to, over here, since you're talking about resistance, I would like to bring up the role of Arab governments.
Sure.
You know, the Arab nations, alhamdulillah, their sentiments are with...
And the Arab people.
With the Palestinian, you know, the nations, the people, right?
And you see them coming out on the streets supporting Palestine.
Wherever and whenever
even against their own governments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the governments, the Arab governments, unfortunately, and it's a very shameful reality that the role of the Arab governments has been really, really pathetic, really shameful. These cowards who are running these governments, right? First of all, again, there are too many discussions in it.
Yeah.
How did they come into power? And this is like an invitation to our viewers to go look up. Like, for instance, Ali Khalifa in Bahrain.
Yeah,
how did they come into power, right?
Yeah,
Ali Saud in
British.
Now, when you look at them from that perspective, you see how they don't resist against the Zionist regime or anything that has to do with the American bloc.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Anglo-Saxon.
Right. But at the same time, we would like to acknowledge that the people of these region. This entire region, you know, their hearts are with Palestinians, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're not allowed to come out on Quds Day. Al Quds Day, they can't be on the streets because of the oppressive dictator that is running their country at the moment. But, you know, that time is not far that the Zionist regime of Israel falls, Palestine gets liberated, and you see the ripple effect in the entire region.
Right.
And this is what we've been saying from day one. That it is the Zionist regime which is the cause of majority of the issues in the Islamic world or the Muslim lands or what Muslim nations have to face. And, you know, one way to prove that is that as soon as the Zionist regime falls, you see the positive changes that take place in this region.
Yeah, inshallah.
Right? Inshallah. These Arab governments, they have been shameful. The only government that I know of that is formally standing up, standing tall, and giving awareness, giving braveness, giving might. And it's not just to do with, you know, the weapons. No, the how do you say it? Like,
yeah, the morale, the spirit.
And that government, that system is none other than the Islamic Republic of Iran, governed and ruled by the system of Wilayat al-Faqih, the divine system of Wilayat al-Faqih, which is being run and operated by the Naib and the deputy of Imam Zaman, Imam Mahdi, Ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif.
Allah hasten his reappearance.
That's the only place I knew.
Yeah, and no, without a doubt, that's the way it is. I was just kind of a little bit concerned on the time issue. I wanted to go to this next question, which deals with, right, so we talked about the Nakba, and we talked about the human rights organizations, we talked about the Axis of Resistance and their role, and finally now, you know, the primary, main, supportive role of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And kind of now towards the end of our discussion, I mean, how do you view these Palestinians that have been exiled, right, all across the world? I mean, do you think they're going to come back, or is this situation going to continue, and they're just going to, you know, have to, you know, I'm no longer a Palestinian, I'm now, for example, a Syrian or a Jordanian or something? I mean, where do you see this going?
Remember how I said in the beginning of the talk show, the never-ending Nakba day for Palestinians, right? I would add and append, will end soon to it.
Awesome.
It's right around the corner. The victory is right around the corner, brothers and sisters, all the resistance factions, all the people of conscience out there, all the people who have heart for Palestinians. Rahbar, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said that it's not more than 25 years before the Zionist regime ceases to exist. And that's at the max, which comes out to be 2040. Right now is 2022. According to many analysts online, you can look it up, you know, and we don't have time to go into it.
Zionist governmental establishment itself admits to this.
Exactly. And we should have brought that quote. I forgot. We discussed about it, but we should have.
Yeah, it was the it was one of the previous prime ministers of the Zionist regime, Israel, that said that there is a very high likelihood that Israel will not see its 80th anniversary.
Right. The day when we simply march, the day when we simply march into Palestine and pray together at Al-Aqsa Masjid is not far.
Inshallah.
This is how I see the future, you asked me. Inshallah. You know, and it's based on what the leader has said. Mm-hmm. It's based on what we are already seeing. Inshallah, the realities on the ground are in favor of Palestinians. And honestly, like, when you think about it, you get goosebumps, right? That Palestine is going to be freed 75 years. And so much of the investment of the great state in America and its cohorts on this very entity is going to go to waste. Just like those $7 trillion in this region went to waste as, and I'm quoting Trump here, as he clearly said that, you know, it went to waste, right? We wasted all that money and resources which belong to the American nation and the people of America.
Yeah,
you know, we're going to see all this investment. This is by far the most expensive project of the imperialists, which is called the Zionist regime.
Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei called it a military garrison.
Yes. Exactly.
So this is a very expensive military base that the imperialist colonialists tried to build. Sheikh Ali,
as the Quran says, you know,
Bismillah.
Innahum yarawnahu ba'ida wa narahu qariba.
Very interesting.
That they surely take it to be far away.
Yeah.
But We see it very near.
We see it very near.
So inshallah, it's right around the corner.
Sheikh Ali Qumi, thank you so much for taking time out and joining us on this talk show where we were commemorating the Nakba Day. Thank you so much. May Allah bless you today and always. And dear viewers, thank you so much for joining us on the Islamic Pulse talk show where we gave our condolences to the world in general and especially our Palestinian brothers and sisters on the Nakba Day, a day which for the Palestinians has not lasted just one day, but has lasted for over 70 years. But by the will and grace of Allah, this Nakba and this catastrophe that has occurred to the Palestinian people will soon be over, inshallah. And with that, we leave you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.